get in your way here.
Where's my water? Are you running that?
Yes.
So I thought,
I'm making sure Sarah gets a recording.
Okay, got it.
Is it here? Oh, yeah. A little bit drunk.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Everybody ready? We're all here. Okay.
Well, technically, I have a minute yet.
4 seconds.
Okay. 3, 2, yeah, okay.
Well, good evening. I'd like to call to order the April 18th meeting of the Rob County Planning Commission. Chad, are you doing the roll or is Tegan doing
it? I am.
Okay.
Troy Brookshire.
Here.
Steve Warnke.
Yep.
John Merrill.
Here.
Brian Kelly.
Present.
Bill Norris.
Here.
Andrew Benjamin.
Here.
Peter Flint. Greg Eger. Roberta Marshall.
Here.
Jeff Pettis.
Present.
Carl Kohler.
Thank you, Chad. We have a quorum. Couple of bits of housekeeping. Number one, I'd appreciate it if all cell phones are either silenced or turned off or however you do that. Two, there should be a sign-up sheet going around. I can actually see it because I think Bob's got it. Please sign in. The last item would be these proceedings are available to the public to listen in on via telephone. However, the only way that really works effectively is we all use the microphones in front of us. And so to our guests this evening, if you'll be addressing the planning commissioners, please use the lectern. I appreciate that. First order of business, public comment. Anyone who wishes to address the commission on any topics that are not on the agenda this evening, now would be the time to do so. Seeing none, I'm going to close that portion of public comment. Approval of minutes, March 21st, 2019. Any additions, subtraction, corrections, clarifications, or what have you? Thank you, Commissioner Pettis. Second. Brian, thank you. All those in favor, please signify by saying yes.
Yes. Yes.
Opposed, say no. Minutes are approved from the 21st of March. Next item on the agenda, T-Mobile conditional use permit amendment. In my sense, that's you.
Hi, my name is Janet Keller. I am here representing American Tower and T-Mobile. What they are requesting is a co-location onto an existing cell tower. It's on Highway 131 in Taponas. And in addition to the colo, they are requesting a 20-foot extension in height in the tower. I believe Christy is going to go through all the particulars on it. But the map that you can see that's up will bring it from, I don't know if you can see the top part, but it's currently zero coverage there to down the bottom, the paint coverage. It's not going to drastically increase the coverage in the area. This particular tower is more to help carry the coverage on for other towers. So I will come back up and address whatever questions you guys have after Christy. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Christy, you're on.
All right. Thank you, Janet.
So before you even start, am I thinking this tower isn't functioning at all, period, right now?
It is not.
It is not functioning.
Correct. So this tower was approved in 2012, and it was built at 95 feet. And there have been issues specifically with line of sight to the closest tower that is located in Yampa. In order for this tower to be operable for being used to its highest functionality with regard to backhaul data. So this request is to extend the height of the tower, and as you know, we have a standard in our regulations that limits heights of towers to 100 feet. This request would be for an extension of 20 feet at 115 feet. Normally, we wouldn't be able to process this application, but under the Spectrum Act, which was outlined in your staff packet, it allows for the county to process this application if the tower meets specific criteria that are related to co-location type applications, which this is. So the request would be for panel and microwave antenna. Specifically, the microwave antenna is what really is needed for that backhaul to reach the Yampa Tower. They also are adding additional equipment to the area of this 56-acre parcel. It is along Highway 131, as Janet mentioned. And they are adding an additional equipment shelter. It's all within the actual equipment area, including the access road to Highway 131 is about 2,500 square feet. The footprint of that area is not changing in size. Just additional equipment that meets that criteria will be added to this space. And this is, which was in your packet, the additional height of the tower, showing the panel antenna along with the microwave addition. And this is just an overview of what that looks like. So as we mentioned, there are specific criteria that staff had to review. We feel that it does meet the criteria outlined in the FCC as this being that it will not substantially change the physical dimensions of the tower based on that criteria. So that was in your issues for discussion. We specifically just stuck to the Spectrum Act standards since this already went through review and approval when this tower came through in 2012. And so just going through those for the record, you know, the tower will not be increased by more than 10% or 20 foot, whichever is greater. The next, that the tower does not protrude from the edge of the tower more than 20 feet, which it does not. The tower does not defeat any existing concealment elements. There were never that were proposed with this tower to begin with. Apart from this being a monopole, as opposed to an old-style lattice-style structure. So that won't be changing. The tower does not entail any excavation outside of the current tower site. As I said, the footprint of the equipment area is not changing. The tower does not involve the installation of more than the standard number of equipment cabinets for the technology involved, not to exceed four. And the proposed project complies with prior conditions of approval, except for the height of the tower, which was made a condition of approval, that it be no more than 100 feet. So that is something that would need to be considered as amendment of this application. So with that, staff did include some proposed changes for the conditions of approval, and they were outlined in bold, and that had to do with removing that condition of approval, which is in condition of approval number 2. And we also included, this is on page 5, we also included outlining exactly what is being proposed instead of the general condition that states approval of the overall project plan. So we are stating that it's including 2 equipment cabinets, the installation of panel antenna, and a microwave dish with the support cables, eliminating the shall exceed 100 foot in height, and that the tower shall not exceed 115 foot in height. The only other change to the conditions of approval had to do with condition of approval number 18. The bolded language states that the permittee shall bring the facilities subject to the CUP into service or on air within 3 months of the application of the building permit. This was decided to put as a condition of approval from newer cell towers because of this tower originally. However, we have been a little lenient on that with other providers depending on need, and I did speak with Janet on this particular condition of approval, and I do think that they would need a little bit more time, and you might be able to ask her what length of time may be appropriate, or if you wanted to eliminate it since it wasn't in the original permit. But there is some, you know, assurance for the county to, you know, to have that condition be placed in the new permit. And the last condition of approval number 19, since the original was an older permit, we didn't have the newer language either, 19, which has to do with transfer language of the permit. So a lot of times these towers do change ownership, and when that happens, the new owner needs to accept the conditions, accept the new permit with the conditions of approval. It is a regulation. It's in the regulations. However, we generally like to include that language in the amended permit. So we added that language as well. I think that is it. Oh, and then staff added some findings of fact for your consideration, 1 through 3.
Questions for staff? Anyone?
Kirsty, do we know if there's any anti-perching devices already installed?
I believe I saw them on the plans. That's pretty standard, the standard cell tower language to have those perching devices on there.
But currently, we don't know if they're on.
If they're on?
Yeah. Do you know?
I don't know.
I only know the scope of work. I don't know AT&T, who it was.
AT&T was the original. Anti-perching devices. Yeah.
And photo doesn't show it. Any other questions? Andy?
What about the tower that was approved on the butte just down the road?
Funny you mentioned that, Andy.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah. That tower was approved. So there was a tower that came through in 2016 for Fidelity Towers. That was supposed to be a solution to this tower not operating at that time. And Fidelity Tower was contacted by AT&T, and they were going to be basically the middleman to get that line of sight to this Fidelity Tower, which was in between the current, this existing site, the subject site, and in Yampa, the Yampa site. That tower was never built. However, we've been in communication with Fidelity, who still want to build that tower. And as of actually today, I've been in communication with Fidelity and had heard from a source at T-Mobile that they are communicating together to still build that tower, which will increase the coverage area even more. However, even if that tower, it's my understanding, even if Fidelity was built, it still wouldn't resolve the complete issue of what's going on at Taponis without the height extension.
Going back and trying to remember, we saw maps.
Yes.
That showed coverage at the current height.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious how all of that's going to work together now.
It's my understanding that once this, if this tower is built to the height that is needed, that will suffice, that will work, providing coverage for the Taponis area. However, it will be even better and an improvement on the coverage maps that you saw. Yep. For in between Taponis and Yampa with Fidelity being built.
So
as
did
well.
Fidelity get an extension to their permit then?
They've already acted on their permit. They just haven't built it yet. So the condition of approval says once the building permit is pulled, it has to be built within 3 months and put on air.
3 years.
No, the condition of approval is that once they pull a building permit, that it has to be built within 3 months.
3 months.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of due diligence that they need to accomplish between county planning commission approval and building permit, and it's just taking them a long time.
Right.
But we consider them acting upon the permit.
But what you're referring to, I believe, is a building permit. You have 3 years, but they never pulled their building permit, so that...
3 years or 3 months?
A building permit, when you pull a building permit, it's active, it's good for 3 years. This, the condition of approval that we're talking about and what Fidelity has on their CUP, which was 3 months from when they pulled their building permit.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Right. How far north of the Taponis Tower is the Fidelity Tower?
It is, I would say, a good halfway. It's up on the Mesa, County Road
5.
I think it's... I actually don't know. Let's see. Let's see if this pointer will work. All right. So this is the Taponis site, and this is Yampa. Fidelity is approximately right there. Yeah. And then that would be the coverage. And, Jen, that coverage right there is showing that's just for Taponis, correct? Yeah. So we can't present, we don't have a coverage map for Fidelity if that doesn't go through. This at least will get this tower working now, and that would be the coverage.
I mean, so the reality is right now there's no coverage in there, period.
Correct.
We're done.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And for the longest time, we had gotten calls in the past about extensions for the tower, but we've always had the standard and the regulations until, you know, the Spectrum Act was presented to us. We really didn't have a way to process height extension.
Is the Spectrum Act federal?
Yes.
It is. And what promulgated that? This. Kind of.
I mean, I don't think it was specifically this, but I feel there were a lot of communities that really were anti-cell towers. So it was a way to promote co-locations if you met certain criteria.
Good.
And this, apart from the height, just say if it was only an 80-foot tower, this could have been processed as a co-location and actually would have been something you wouldn't have seen. It would just have been a co-location, a minor use permit, what we normally would process. But because of the height issue and the specific condition of approval, it's coming back before you.
Other questions for staff and or the petitioner?
I just have one question, Steve.
Yes, ma'am.
You asked for an extension of time on the condition. What would be appropriate?
So T-Mobile is asking for as much time as possible because whenever you, and they didn't give me a specific number, they're just like, ask for as much as they'll give you. So sorry I could give you a vague answer. The reason why is because in order to meet the full 3 months, they could do the construction in the 3 months, so they could do the height extension and add the antennas and do all that. The tricky part is the on-air verbiage that's on there. Because for that to work, construction would need to be complete at other towers. So that would be step one, is other towers in the area that are going to be carrying that radio wave to that tower would need to be complete. So that's step one, in just integrating this tower into T-Mobile's overall network so that it could work. A very one that doesn't seem like it would take a lot of time, but is there's an E911 compliance testing that needs to be done, and so that takes a little bit of time as well. So realistically speaking, 3 months to make sure that construction in the area is done and getting through, getting it put into T-Mobile's network and getting the compliance through is would be pretty difficult for them to accomplish. So what they're asking is, are there any contingencies for extensions? What options are available to them?
Sorry?
We have some comments on that.
I am confused, though. What you're saying is, you don't really know.
They had asked for a year, but I don't know if you guys really want to say a whole year.
Well, but that's better than when I was hearing nothing, so nothing could be 10 years.
Yes, so they're asking for 1 year was the very specific, but they said to try and ask for as long as possible. To me, I wasn't sure if going from 3 months to 12 months was realistic, gotcha. So that's why I gave a vague answer.
We can suggest, I mean, I think the condition needs to stay in there for a very good reason. But perhaps we can look at additional language and do administrative extensions that they can be extended for 3 months at a time or with showing due diligence of,
gotcha.
Of working on getting this on air.
Well, based on what I've just heard, I think the year is the outside. Right?
It won't. I don't think it'll take them a full year. I think that
no, but I'm just trying to establish an outside parameter.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need any more than a year.
But this,
that's fair.
This tower is the reason why we have this condition. So I would, you know, recommend just keeping the fire under them, even if it puts that extension authority on me. You know, that I'm sure that when I report back to Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners that I've at least received due diligence, that they are working on getting things done.
Right.
I was told at a Labor Day meeting that this was the biggest mistake that we ever made on planning.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I don't feel too bad about that, though.
It's a bummer because, like, we had all these six towers were presented as one unit. They were all shown to be working together. It was going to be this great utopian cell signal, and this is the only one that has really fallen short on it, which is why the other one came in to help with this.
Right.
But it sounds like it's not a
it's more of an issue with infrastructure that AT&T never followed through with than it is actually the tower wasn't the right height or this didn't work or that doesn't work. It was shown to work as designed.
Right.
Any other questions for staff or the petitioner at this point?
Maybe.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I hear that if they need guide wires, that they have to come back and amend this permit.
Mm-hmm.
And it would seem like we ought to know right now whether 115 feet needs a guide wire or doesn't. Do you know the answer?
There's a structural analysis that was already completed. It's not in the staff report. The way this tower is built, with it being a monopole, it will not need any guy wires. It will be structurally sound as is.
John.
I'm a little more clear on the technical uncertainties. What about the business uncertainties? Could you tell us something about whether there are co-locators signed up and if there are any provisions for that?
I don't understand your question. Do you mind restating it?
Other companies that may choose to co-locate, I believe that's the term, on this new improved tower.
So will there be additional co-locators on this tower besides T-Mobile?
Right.
As far as I know, I'm not aware of that. If you're worried about, are you worried about like height extension again?
No,
or what is
I'm
it?
Okay. This is not a technical question. It's a business question.
Typically, what happens when a tower goes on air, which this one, I'm not sure 100% if it's on air, but I'm going based on Christie's expertise. Once it's on air, all the hard work has been done, and then other companies see that the hard work's been done, and then they follow like ants to make sure that that they can also do it. So that's why it's always, I believe that's probably my guess, and I'm not 100% sure because I'm not the owner of Fidelity, but I'm guessing that's probably why they haven't built a tower, is because they don't have the primary tenant for that yet, which would be T-Mobile, I'm guessing, based on what Christie said.
Okay.
So.
Bill?
Christie, Andy brought up a good point. He says 95 was engineered, 95 feet was engineered. It was supposed to work. And now Janet just said 20 feet more is supposed to work?
Mm-hmm.
We're getting that supposed to work twice. Is it going to work this time?
Well, I mean, I think that's the importance of that condition of approval.
Can I explain why they would be different? So every carrier gets their own wavelength of that they're allowed to work in. And so whenever they have those wavelengths, so it's like kind of like a totem pole, you're only allowed to work in this area. So that when you're using your cell phone, if one person has Verizon and another person has T-Mobile, so that they're not mixing and causing issues with each other. So because of that, T-Mobile is not allowed to be put in the same areas where AT&T is. AT&T owns the rights to those areas. So their rights are at certain, they call them rad centers, so those are certain particular parts on the tower, and they're only allowed to be at those certain areas and broadcast at certain frequencies. So T-Mobile, in order for T-Mobile to work, the only acceptable or approved places that they could be on this tower is 115 or 86 feet. If we did 86 feet, then we would start having what they would call backhaul problems, which would mean that the microwave that is getting put on the cell tower would have a hard time communicating with the next cell tower because it wouldn't have that line of sight. It would be able to do it. It just wouldn't be at optimal performance. I don't know the exact performance at the 86 feet, but it wouldn't be. The coverage would probably be about half what it's showing right there. Does that help answer your questions and concerns on that?
Thank you. Fred?
Just piggybacking on Bill's question, has the math been done that once you raise it 20 feet, it is indeed a clear line of sight, you know?
Uh-huh. So they already got that figured out. That's exactly part of their long-term plan to make sure that that backhaul does work. Because the last thing they want to do is to dump a lot of money into a tower to not work. And I know that AT&T burned you guys, but it's not good business practice to just dump money into things and not have them work. So,
but it has happened.
It has happened. This is true. Yeah.
Well, you're hearing the follow-up question.
Yeah, that's fine.
So if somebody else wanted to co-locate, would they then have to extend up higher?
I don't know. Work with T-Mobile stuff, and T-Mobile's spots are different.
Yeah, so the other part of this puzzle of why the tower isn't working, it's two-part. So it's a line-of-sight issue. It's also AT&T, when they came through, they never finalized their right-of-way easements to extend fiber to this tower, fiber optic. And that's still not the case. So,
line of sight wasn't important the first time.
Yeah, they were relying on this fiber. And now, in order for T-Mobile to work, that's why they're adding the microwave dish in lieu of extending the fiber optic, which I believe it's the intent of T-Mobile to also finalize those agreements, I've been told. So they're going to be doing both.
So let's say that the right-of-way agreements never came into play,
mm-hmm.
and Verizon wanted to come in, and they said, well, we need the tower at 150 feet to work because 86 feet doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
they wouldn't be they wouldn't be eligible under the spectrum?
No, because we have the 100-foot limitation on the height, and something what you just explained wouldn't have met the criteria under the Spectrum Act as a co-location.
However, if you rephrased your question and added and did 125 feet, what's the answer?
I don't believe that would meet the criteria.
I don't think it would.
No.
Because
115 is, I think, the max of that temperature.
So the Spectrum Act.
That's what I'm asking.
The way that I understand the Spectrum Act is however the tower was originally built. So it is 10% of the original tower,
mm-hmm.
Or 20 feet, whichever is greater.
Because when we talked about that intermediary tower, I lamented back that I would have rather have approved a taller tower to make the whole thing work in the first place. Like, but whatever. It's all good. This is an important thing.
Yeah, I agree.
It needs to happen.
Okay. Any other questions for staff and petitioner at this point? Hold on. Okay, I'll open up to the public. Anyone in the public wishes to comment? Now would be the time to do so.
I'm one of these guys go first. I just thought
that was kind of fun. The lectern, please.
Oh, okay. Are you going to read the letters from people here?
Well, we've got the letters, so we've received them.
Hi. Do they get right here?
No, they're just here. They're public information in our packets. Sir.
Hi, my name is Ron Curtis. I live in Taponas. I'm about 7/10 of a mile just south of this tower. And I was here in the 2012 meeting when we were told the same thing, that we would have service up and running. We haven't. And so I have some questions that some of my neighbors that couldn't be here wanted me to ask. And I think I have some of the answers, but I want to make sure if the board approves it, it'll be 3 months to do the construction that they need to raise the tower, but you're giving them up to a year before we'll have service in our town?
Well, we haven't agreed anything yet.
Oh, I'm just saying that's part of the what are our parameters of when we can have service? 3 months to 12 months? Is that what I heard?
I think we heard from the petitioner that they would like up to 12
okay,
months.
Okay, that's yes. An option.
Yeah.
Okay. In 2012, the leases were made for these landowners. What is the lifespan that tower is going to be on this property? Is it a 20-year lease, from when it was constructed, or how long are we going to have the tower? Forever? I mean, do you have a timeline on how long the towers are going to be there?
20-year lease.
How about this?
From 2012?
We'll take the questions one at a time, and then she can answer, respond to them.
Okay. She answered most of my other questions, but I got to tell you that since 2012, we're the closest house that we're home most of the time because I'm retired and I'm there. And I'll say, without exaggeration, we've had between 6 and 8 people stop at our door for assistance because they're broke down, they're in the ditch, or they've hit an animal and they can't get cell phone service. So we let them use our landline, and they sit in our house waiting for AAA to come pick them up or give them a ride. I probably fill 4 or 5 gas tanks with gas because people are out of gas and there's no gas between Edwards and Yampa. People don't know that, so they're out of gas sitting on the highway, so I give them my gas. And so we really need to get this tower up and running, because if you look at that map on the Gore, that's open range. We've had people hitting cattle at night. We've had people hitting elk, deer, sliding in the ditch. I think we've had a fatality up there, I'm pretty sure. Not because we didn't have cell phone service, but it would be nice to have cell phone service up there. So we'd really like to see this get done in our community and find out when it can be done and how long it'll be there for. And if T-Mobile's going to be the carrier, and it sounds like they possibly could be the only one in those 70 piggybacks, are there going to be discounts to get people to switch over from some of their other carriers on a plan, possibly? I mean, there are questions you may not know, but this is questions that the people in the community would like to know. And is AT&T affiliated with T-Mobile? I know we've heard AT&T, we've heard T-Mobile. So if we get AT&T or T-Mobile, will both of the plans work there? Because at one time we thought they bought each other out. So.
Would you like me to answer
this question? We'll see if there's any more first, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from the public?
Frank Hughes, kind of a neighbor there, live in Taponas. I didn't get a look at the map yet, but just kind of listening here tonight, there's a bunch of questions about height, and one thing that popped up is, what do you care if it's another 100 foot tall? Why would that affect? We just want some cell service down there. Not all, but most of you live here. You have the comfort of a cell phone. We don't. Why? I don't get the theory with a height restriction. And kind of speaking for another good block of the community, just what's the alternative? Whether they had a plan and it didn't quite work out or they didn't, this is our best shot now to get service down there. There's not... I mean, what's the opposite of that? You don't allow this, and so then it still don't work? I mean, what? I don't follow that train of thought either. So, just quite a few people in the Egeria Park and Taponas just want cell service. This is the best route. Just here in support. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Hearing none, I'm going to close that.
Oh, there's one.
What?
One more.
Oh.
Hi, I'm Shirlene White, and I actually live in Oak Creek. But my question is, in the original plan was fiber optics. And that's why we didn't care about the tower being as tall as we need it now. I'm asking if this is correct, if I have this correct. And that is why we now have to go taller with the tower, because we're going to be a microwave tower. And so now you need the line of sight. So my question is, what happened to the fiber optic, and why didn't we not go through with that original plan? Because wouldn't that have been better? Or what fell through there from the approved prior plan?
Thank you. Any other questions from the public? I'll close the public portion of the hearing. You want to comment on the land leases? If you can. I mean, I recognize that in some instances maybe you but try.
So as it's a 20-year lease, and it did start when it was originally built. But that doesn't mean that it can't get extended. So hopefully that answers it. AT&T and T-Mobile are not affiliated. This tower is owned by American Tower, and American Tower gets contacted by carriers such as T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon to get permission to get on the tower. What fell through with the fiber, I'm not sure, because that would have been something that was with the lease agreement with for the sub with AT&T. Yeah. So Christy might know the answer on that one. I hope I answered all of your questions. Oh, something that I did want to point out so that you guys would know. Whenever a carrier is on access or on air, if somebody dials 911, even if they're AT&T or Verizon, if they're not T-Mobile, if they were in that area and T-Mobile was on air, 911 would work. So, because it's a federal regulation that the tower has to carry whatever's the closest tower has to carry that 911 call. So,
it's good to know. You want to take a shot at the fiber cable?
The county wasn't involved with those negotiations, so that would have been on AT&T to work out the negotiations with, to my understanding, with CenturyLink, and because they own the right-of-way utility easement there, and for whatever reason they couldn't come to an agreement. But it's my understanding, I mean, I wasn't here in 2012, but that's how the application was presented at that time.
I mean, I think to a limited extent, the problem that we have is we act on best faith efforts of everyone, and we can't control what happens from a business standpoint if this don't work out. So, any additional questions for?
I can answer Frank's question.
Sure.
About the why we have a height maximum? You know, because back, I'm not sure how long that's been in place. It could have been late 90s, but back in the late 90s, the community was concerned about the proliferation of these cell phone towers, you know, mainly some of the ugly ones that have been popping up in a metropolitan area. And I believe that maximum was put in place, you know, as a result of that concern from the community about having many large towers, you know, throughout the community.
Well, if you put more than one down there, I
should
agree with that, but there's only one tower.
Right, and it was supposed to work. So, no, I understood.
Commissioners, it seems to me that in terms of the criteria that are required to comply with Spectra, I think the petitioner pretty much complies with those, as evidenced by staff's comments as well. I'm interested to hear what your thoughts might be on condition number 18, which is the time period issue.
I like staff's recommendation.
Oh, which was?
To put the 3-month incremental check-ins with administrative approval of an extension upon showing due diligence.
And was there an end to the 3-month extensions?
Staff did not propose one, but I think we heard a year, so based on the applicant's own request, we'll say not to exceed 1 year.
Any other comments on that? Brian?
I would say 6 months and then 3-month renewal. They're pretty clearly stating they're not going to do this in 3 months. So it seems like we're putting a paperwork burden on staff in 3 months, and they've already said they're not going to have it done. So, but I do want to hold their feet to the fire. I think there's been some bad faith by other operators on this particular tower. And the reason you want to cite these things is so they work for the people. You know, you want to have as few of them up there as you need to access the areas you need to access. You don't want them everywhere. Most people don't. They don't see the scenic value in them. But I think it adds quite a bit to the scenery and components. It's in our pack. It says it right there.
Any other comments or suggestions or concerns?
I might kind of lean towards what Brian's proposing. I think both are acceptable. But with the respect of that, it probably won't get done in the first 3 months.
And yet, a year seems too much. It just seems, if you don't get it done in bonus by September, October, you might just not get it done for a while.
To be clear, the applicant indicated that the construction would be completed within 3 months. It's the permitting and testing and so on and so forth. I don't think the snow is the issue, but... And I'm not opposed to saying 6 months to be done within a year, but at least at these 3 month increments, we will have somebody working towards that goal. If we don't get to month six, and, oh, there's that deadline that we forgot about. You know?
So it's a shorter check-in, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and staff suggested that to begin with, so I think that's a reasonable task.
Well, you're saying that.
I think 3 months is just wishful thinking. I'd rather do it one time and give it 6 with not to exceed a year. Or the one-time extension, which would take 9 months, I guess, instead of 12. But I think just putting 3 in there and just asking for a staff.
Right. Agreed. I mean, I think by their own admission, it's 3 months within the application and building permit issuance. And I think then there's, that almost takes 3 months to put that up. But I misunderstood one thing. Did you say 6 months with a 3 month extension or 6 months with 2 3 month extensions? Because I heard 9 months once and then I heard a year.
And which is in the middle of it. Well, we don't know. See, you have no idea when they're going to apply for a building.
Right.
So. I think that's a wild card.
Right. Yeah, because condition one says provided it is acted upon within 1 year.
See, so...
I mean, acted upon, you know, is...
It may be a year from the April 1st when I even apply for the building. So I'm good with...
What's that?
It's a 6 month with a 1 3 month administrative extension. That way, if they don't get it done in 9, they got to come back here for extension.
I know you're on roundtable.
Yeah.
However, some important information I think Janet could share about how quickly they need to apply based on you getting the grant. You might want to hear this.
Oh.
So for licensing, T-Mobile has to have, they have to start... the permitting process and start construction on this before June 1st. So part of their compliance with the federal regulation is that they have a certain amount of cell towers and areas that are functioning. So they would need to do this as soon as possible. They don't want to just put this on the back burner. This is one of their, they called it licensing agreement towers.
So is this an FCC issue or...
It's a licensing issue to make sure that they're in compliance. So, yes.
Well, if you take that approach, why don't we quit debating and just say it's 6 months? It's 1st of December.
My only concern is if for whatever reason the testing takes longer than necessary, or you know, they're having difficulty with FCC approvals or whatever, and the application fails for not having enough time, the people at Deponents are the ones that suffer.
Yep. How about 6 months and another 3 months extension?
I think they demonstrated they need service. So
yeah, I mean, that never was the issue, I think, going in. We all recognize they need service. It's just how do we get there?
It would seem to me, Steve, that once they've made the investment in the infrastructure, that they have a motivation as a business to get it online as fast as possible.
Roberta, I would have a tendency to disagree with you, with the exception of as evidenced by where we're at right now. Tower's up.
Well, that's true. Good. Point taken.
Yeah. Sir, go ahead.
A lot of back and forth, but not doing this project. I guess back to my point is, what's the alternative?
I think you might be you might be misreading.
So I'm just saying there's understandable, but what would be the alternative?
I don't think there is any.
Well, I think that we're looking at it too from the county point of view here. Like, so if nothing happens, I mean, not the county. You know, they're going to presumably get approvals to do this. Okay, but then if nothing happens, what I'm hearing you say is it just goes on forever. Well, that's really not the county's position. There needs to be a deadline of...
No, what's the alternative?
Well, it's the same as you got today then. You ain't going to have service. If these people don't perform, you still are going to have service. And that has nothing to do with Rock County. It's these people's job.
I don't think we're debating that. You're missing this, I think. All we're doing is trying to ensure that service does exist.
Or even a timeline. We never had a phone network. Why would a timeline even matter?
I think they lose the right.
What?
They lose the right.
I don't understand, but there's somebody trying to get phone service into homes. At least somebody's trying.
We got that.
It don't matter what. I don't care if it's a year or 2 years. AT&T put fiber optics all up and down the road. We can't use them. It's sitting right there.
Anyway, moving on. Do we have the items for discussion we're done with, I think?
Yes.
Would you like a motion, Mr. Chairman?
No.
I don't think we're done yet.
And I'd like to suggest whoever wants to make the motion that condition 14 puts a timeline on when these devices get installed. Because I do think it's important for birds and wildlife to do the best we can. And I don't want this to get overlooked and oversight and not done. I think those things are very minimal and can be done. I just want to know that they'll get done. That's my point. So my thought was no later than the date of this thing going on air, which is the term found in condition 18. So when it goes on air, these anti-perching devices shall be installed. My
any other discussions?
What's that?
Comments? So, at this point in time, we're considering 18 to be amended to talk in terms of a 6-month permit with a 3-month extension.
Staff.
Sorry?
Staff.
Three.
Administrative.
Yeah. Sorry, administrative extension. And we're amending 14 to reflect that whatever anti-perching devices are to be installed by the time the system is on air, no later than that. Okay. Anything else? Brian, you started.
Okay, I've just been waiting.
I move we approve the applicant's for the new singular wireless tower being elevated to 115 feet, conditions 1 through 18, with 14 and 18 as amended as just stated by the chairman.
And I'm sure you want to talk about the findings of fact.
Findings of fact 1 through
3. So we have a motion on.
I'll second.
Thank you, Roberta. Any discussion on the motion? Staff, is it clear on what we did?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All those in favor of the motion as presented and seconded, please signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. Anyone opposed, please say no. Chair votes yes, motion is carried. Next item on the agenda. Master plan update discussion. Christy, are you leading us on this?
I believe Chad is going to start us
off.
That's
kind of a group effort.
Okay. And before you get too far down the road on this, at some point in time, I'd like to open it up to the public. But I think the commissioners have some thoughts, too, and that is, I think staff did a really nice job in terms of providing us a pretty decent narrative on what has happened. I particularly care for the review of the action items. Thank you, Christy.
Yeah.
Oh, Alan, thank you.
It was a group effort.
Okay, fine. With that thought in mind, though, it seemed to be in the matter of any issue or in the interest of expediting, maybe we just talk about the action items that didn't happen. We don't need to review the ones that did.
I think Alan's got a brief summary of each chapter.
Perfect.
Good.
Alan, you're on.
Okay. Actually, I'm starting. Yeah. You know, as Chrissy mentioned in her memo, this is phase one. I mean, this is basically the work that's getting us ready, you know, to take this amendment process to the community. You know, and I anticipate that, you know, this is interactive tonight. I mean, we have time for Q&A afterwards, but I would suggest if anybody has any questions or comments along the way, just let us know what those are. All right, so the topics, like were shown in your handout, review and status of the action items, discussion on the update list presented at the joint meeting. So if you all remember, for those of you that were here, didn't quite have enough time to get into those details. Probably should start with planning commission anyway. Examples of master plans from other mountain resort towns. And, you know, basically, you know, because ours is 16 years old, I don't know how many of you have actually gone out to look and see, hey, what's the latest and greatest? You know, what's a modern plan look like? Well, we thought we'd show you some examples. You know, and what the next steps would be, you know, moving forward from today. So, now, I'll turn it over to Alan for the action item summary.
So, with Steve's comments, I know everybody has read the staff's response to all of the action items. I just wanted to highlight some of the each one of the chapters, and if y'all have specific questions on an individual action item, please feel free to ask. So I'll start off with Chapter 3, Development. So in 2004, the county did hire a consultant to prepare an impact feasibility study, but the result of that was any benefit of collecting impact fees would not generate enough revenue to justify collection of those fees, so it was not implemented. And this one responds to another action item in the transportation section. Moving on to Chapter 4, no land was ever rezoned to the AC zone district, mainly because of a lack of incentives that were acceptable to the large landowners in the counties. in the county. The one thing that was offered by landowners for incentive to rezone to AC was they didn't have to apply for any building permits. And the county said that that was not acceptable, and that's kind of where the conversation stopped. Planning staff really doesn't receive complaints about agricultural practices, so because of the lack of the complaints, county has not created any new regulations to address that. And the LPS process is the main process used to preserve land from development. The county did explore creation of a TDR program, but it was not deemed feasible. However, the LPS regulations do have a non-contiguous remainder parcel, which is kind of like a transfer of development rights, which allows those development rights to be transferred from a particular parcel to another one to allow for additional density to where it's being transferred to. And then, of course, the PDR program that has conserved over 56,000 acres throughout the county. Chapter 5, all of those action items have been accomplished. Chapter 6, recreation and tourism. The recreation influence zones were an idea of a previous director, and staff was really unsure what her intent on creation of these zones were. So because of that, it wasn't pursued. And also the board didn't want to draw lines on a map that would potentially make one parcel of land more valuable than another. So two reasons why those were never pursued. So then for the mineral resources, gravel pits are evaluated on a case-by-case basis to determine whether that particular operation is appropriate on that site. And because of that, a comprehensive analysis of gravel deposits was not deemed necessary. And then the matrix use was discontinued because its accuracy and usefulness were questioned, and it involved a lot of staff time to keep the matrix current, and it has not been used in quite some time. So hazards to development, there was one comment received from the public after the staff report went out about why we don't have defensible space regulations and requirements, and that's mainly because the county doesn't process a lot of subdivisions, and most of the development that goes on in the county happens through means that don't come through the planning process. So we don't have a lot of say in those types of developments. And the applications that do come through are sent to the state forester for referral. And the county typically encourages creating defensible space as recommended by the state forester. And then also enforcement is an issue because of the lack of staff resources that would be required to follow up on regulations such as those. Chapter 9, wildlife resources. Section 6 contains mitigation measures that should be employed to mitigate impacts to wildlife. And as you know, all applications CPW gets referrals on applications, and they make comments on impacts from the development to wildlife resources, and Planning Commission and the board pretty much always support their recommendations and their conditions of approval. Agricultural lands. The main thing used to support ag lands is the LPS process, which encourages preservation of large tracts of lands for ag production. And then other things that have been utilized by the county to promote agriculture is the value-added ag regulations, agritourism, farm stands, and then a local foods worksheet that was created through collaboration with the Extension Office, which allows a producer to come in and get feedback from different county departments and agencies that would have a say in that have regulations or policies that would affect that operation. The transportation section, the county does have road and driveway standards that dictate the minimum width of a driveway, and those are mainly come from the Uniform Fire Code, and that fire code does offer flexibility in those standards as long as other mitigation measures are employed to reduce any danger. And then oil and gas development is required to conduct a road study as part of the application submission process. Staff will not deem an oil and gas application complete unless a road study is completed. And same thing for a gravel pit or a mine or anything that has high impacts to county roads. And then housing opportunities are addressed through the county's cooperation with the Yampa Valley Housing Authority and the Steamboat Springs Area Plan Coordinating Committee. And then, as you know, short-term rentals are prohibited in the agricultural zone district except through the bed and breakfast conditional use process.
As you may know, I happen to know somebody on city council fairly well. And I had occasion to ask her about the West Area Plan Coordination Committee, mm-hmm. and she had no idea. She'd never heard of such a thing. What is that?
The West Area. You
mean the area?
The area plan Coordinating Committee?
Yeah. I sat on the Yampa Valley Housing Authority Steering Committee, and that term never came up then either.
Yeah, well, the Area Plan Coordinating Committee has been inconsistent but ongoing since maybe 95, you know, and it seems to have a little more push behind it after the adoption of the 95 plan or the 2004 plan, but it mainly is a plan implementation committee that is made up of two city council members, Board of County Commissioner, two representatives from each planning commission.
Who sits on that here?
Andy just got appointed.
I'm going to shake it up, Jeff. I'll get it moving, I promise you.
Yeah.
Andy has been to a meeting.
I've never read about you guys.
I haven't been to a meeting yet. I volunteered to take up that position.
And Andy, we can't wait.
You can't wait. Like I'm just,
and John.
Yeah.
And I've been to all the meetings.
And so it does exist.
They were supposed to be monthly. Now they're probably going to be quarterly. Because the person that always canceled the meetings got canceled herself.
Okay.
Thank you.
I wonder who that
is. Are you sure you'd like to answer that?
Well, originally when it was sworn, it was right after the adoption of the comp plan. And there were a lot of council and I remember exactly. Paul Hughes was there, city manager, mm-hmm. came religiously.
Right.
You know, I can't remember when that kind of phased out, but it was an effort to kind of keep the comp plan out in front. But then I think what has happened over 20 years is that there's not been any development in West Seattle. So therefore, the Area Plan Coordinating Committee kind of had nothing to coordinate. Yeah. But that was really its formation.
Right. Our next meeting is actually in May.
May 5th.
May 5th. John has it. And we're going to be taking a look at the action items in the plan. I mean, there are, you think we have a lot of action items?
I should
items?
Put it in my calendar.
I
keep building
energy. No, I'm sorry. May 8th. I was wrong.
Since I've heard
May 8th.
Something happening.
What time, John? Sunday.
I don't know what time.
But it's getting going again.
10 o'clock. Sorry.
Oh, it's in here at 10 o'clock. It says it's at 10 a.m.
I've
already got it.
Okay, now that we've established you've got a calendar, moving on.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
I apologize if I have to dismiss myself.
You're excused.
Thank you. I'll listen to the recording you provide you guys with.
All right. The record show that Justin has left at 7:06.
We still have a call. And I'll speak to him later. Alan, are you continuing?
I was done.
Sorry?
I was done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Short and sweet.
So then we into discussion of possible amendment items?
Yes, the initial update list.
So we presented this list at the joint meeting.
Pictures.
Some of them are, you know, speak for themselves, like the first one. I think we can all agree with that one in particular. And we could just go through these briefly, if there are any objections to them, or when we're done with the list, anything you feel we want to add to the list. But this is going to be used as a starting point for the update discussions.
So staff did reach out in the past, you know, even through one formal agenda item, just to see if the Planning Commission had specific items. And those two, you know, basically involving wildlife and linkage of communities were included in this list as well. Everything else is what staff, you know, could come up with.
You know, just talk about number two. This one's review of action items and modify as necessary.
Yep.
It sure seems to me that you did a reasonably yeoman's job in terms of justifying, however, why there was no action. So I don't know how many of these we really got to talk about.
What, the action items?
Yeah.
I mean, we basically just went over the list.
Right.
That Alan did. So that's just to bring you up to speed of what items have been addressed and what still needs to be looked at. So we would take that list and shorten it based on...
Well, I guess that was going to be my point, based on the comments that were made on the action items that weren't accomplished. There was a pretty good justification for it, so I think that list gets pretty short.
Great. And through the you know, I would say towards the end of the process, you know, if there are new goals, whatnot, or to support existing goals under today's community vision, you know, I would see action items being included or added onto.
Yes.
Brian,
just looking at item 10 and 12.
We're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
We're not there. Okay, sorry.
We're trying to take this in order somehow.
We appreciate your enthusiasm. So number three, policies that guide locals and workforce housing. So this one in particular, I mean, we've said over and over the plan, it states it right in the plan, should be reviewed every 5 years. And this speaks to that of looking at changing demographics and making sure that those policies are in line with community goals is the basis of that, along with these other policies that we're going to mention. So number four, you all received Bob Woodmansey's comments about the plan update. This addresses Bob's concerns, and I think our plan does an excellent job in addressing, maybe indirectly, a lot of things that surround climate change issues, you know, how we direct development to our growth centers and reducing sprawl and protecting our wildlife and natural resources. But more modern plans generally will more directly, you know, have policies directly related to these things. So that's something, you know, really what came out across in Bob's letter that we addressed here.
Do we need to be careful? Maybe this is premature, but do we need to be careful so that we don't? The master plan to me is kind of like a guiding document, and every time I heard a policy word, the guidance gets channeled down. And I guess my issue or concern is we start putting so many policies in here, we no longer have a guiding document as opposed to. Am I making sense?
Yes.
You are.
You know, I would say at the same time, you know, when issues like climate change come up, you know, that might get some people in the room. The Planning Commission is going to talk about climate change policies or action items. But I would just, you know, caution ahead of time that this is a land use plan. You know, and example, going back to the 2004 Steamboat Community Plan, when the word was out that Steamboat was amending the community plan, I mean, we even got, like, United Way that wanted their piece of it, and there were some changes to, you know, like a health and human services plan, and for those of you, probably Bill or Troy, that were on Planning Commission back then, because it was adopted, because it was partially adopted by the Rock County Planning Commission, changes to their action items or policies had to go through the Planning Commission when it was really, yeah, Health and Human Services and United Way. So anyways, so I would just say keep it in check a bit and make sure that what we get out of items like that relate to our focus.
Yep. Sorry, five.
No problem. So number five, oddly enough, we just piggybacked off of an application where we see, you know, in our master plan, I mean, most policies do not support telecommunication facilities, where they go against policies having to do with visual impacts. So we can look at policies that will support broadband expansions without having to create clever findings of facts to support them, which has been done in the past.
And like that comment I made after Mr. Hughes' question, you know, that coming out of the 90s, early 2000s, you know, I think there was this fear of, you know, proliferation of ugly, tall towers. And it was interesting when that tower came through with a bunch of others, you know, the Taponas and the Oak Creek and one in Pleasant Valley, out in, you know, towards Steamboat 2. I forget we had how many that we had come through at once, but they all kind of slid through, you know, and yep. In talk of any, you know, camouflage or monopines, really didn't get any traction. And I remember bringing up at that hearing that, again, like I say all the time, foundation of the master plan is to maintain our Western rural character, and are these industrial-looking poles Western rural character? And one of the Planning Commission members, John Eyre, said, well, I think that the citizens of Rock County expect to see cell towers now as part of the Western rural character. So, you know, I think this is a discussion, you know, along the lines of that number five that has, have things changed since then? Like Frank comments about, well, you know, what if it was 200 feet? You know, maybe it's, we'll check in with the community, see what the expectations are for looking at cell towers.
Include guidance for making variance decisions and board of adjustment. Yeah, there are five criteria that have set on board of adjustment, you know, are probably aware with. But the number five is that it's not contrary to your master plan. But we have absolutely nothing in the master plan that deals with a variance. And so I think it's maybe something that we should kick around too. And usually the master plan isn't that detailed, but you know, staff can look and see what other statutory counties are doing, you know, linkage between those two, because every staff report probably that we've ever done for a BOA variance addressing criteria number five is master plan does not go into this type of detail or is not contrary to.
But couldn't you make the argument that any number of special use permits or conditional use permits that come before this body always going to get reflected back to the master plan? And isn't it the same with the Board of Adjustment? I mean,
it's so precise, I would say, with the Board of Adjustment that, you know, you, if it's a side yard setback, it's 10 feet, and what's that?
Except for the last one.
Right. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. But it's always about the numbers.
Gotcha.
You know, and like I said, it's just, and you guys know the policies, there's really nothing that's in that level of detail. So, yeah, it's just come up with some language where we can have some linkage between the two documents.
Okay.
So the next one, this information, as stated, isn't in the current plan. This could be really great information to tell us, you know, where the appropriate locations, possibly outside of our growth centers, to see future growth. And, you know, whether that is in West Steamboat, there are other areas that we can start to look at that have services to support development that we can look at in the county.
Yeah, and back when the 2003 plan was adopted, you know, we did include demographics and growth trends as part of the creation of the plan. We just didn't include it as part of the plan. You know, there are a couple reasons why. One is that a lot of that, at least general information, you know, census and then supplemental accounts are maintained through the state demographer's website, DOLA. You know, but, you know, I think back to, you know, something that Commissioner Cargan said when under this topic, and that was, well, there are, 25,000 people in the county right now? You know, we need to start looking at what it might look like at 50,000. And so that's where demographics and growth trends come in.
Okay.
One example.
The next three.
Brian.
Just a quick question. So, Steamboat 2 Metro, Pittsburgh, and Milner, I haven't been on the Planning Commission very long. I'm familiar with all three of the areas, but as I assume you know what the carrying capacity of the sewer plants and the water facilities are in those three locations.
That information is readily available.
Right.
I couldn't rattle it off, but, you know, maybe just anecdotal right now. But, yeah, it's all easily obtained. And, you know, I think that information would be good to have for the process.
Absolutely. Right, because I wondered when we did that Milner application for the tiny homes, you know, what are we doing to the overall system? You know, what is the capacity of the Milner?
But wasn't that answered even then, I thought?
I didn't hear. I heard it can accommodate this.
Yeah, right.
I'm looking for the big picture. If we're truly planning, what is the capacity?
Gotcha. We can
right.
get you all
and,
that stuff. Last time I checked, 25 taps. 25-ish.
Yeah. Okay, now you're really getting online. What about Pittsburgh?
Don't know. Didn't ask that one.
But Brian, that would all be part of, and that's why that's up here.
Yeah.
Because right now that information isn't in the plan. We do have that information available. We just don't have it at this point of phase one of this process.
Right. And all I'm getting at is planning commissioners. If you've got a limited capacity, you might want to start being more selective about what you might do under a special use permit.
Right. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The next three items somewhat overlap as policies that continue to challenge decision makers. As we see, you know, population growth and we're seeing new trends in land uses, as well as now seeing more use permits being approved, and we're constantly having conversations about intensity of use, at what point do we start looking at cumulative impacts of these items while balancing, you know, our economy and the importance of recreation and tourism has to the economy. So all three of those pretty much overlap. Do you have anything to add? Yes.
Since you're putting the three together, I have a question on eight.
Yes.
Did you and Alan address in Chapter 6 of the 2003 things the concept of recreation influence zones and that it's probably not appropriate to start drawing lines on maps? But what are we going to do for dealing with the pressures of growing population in the tourism industry in terms of number 8? And in terms of number 10, I'm not sure why you lump them together, but in the last sentence of that is something that's troubled me in my years on this as a constantly vague concept, which is intensity of use.
Yes.
And I think that something in the new master plan should address, except to quote the issue here, acceptable intensities and cumulative impacts.
Right, that's why it's on the list. We
yeah,
agree.
Okay,
with you.
I'm just
right.
A matrix would be perfect.
What's that?
A matrix would be perfect.
Well, we have one for
on cumulative impacts.
No, it was related around the struggle that that some of the decision makers were having when it comes specifically to the rec facilities.
Sure.
Those discussions.
Right. Yeah.
So we will build off of that information for these conversations. But
I mean, I think it's in everyone's best interest.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of eliminates a lot of nebulism.
And are we willing to then conceptualize, or if not map, recreation influence zones in future master plans?
Without a definition for that, I wouldn't know how to map it.
Right, and does that relate to cumulative impacts?
It probably does.
You know, because I've just taken a guess that those influence zones might have focused recreation in certain areas, you know, just based off of the name, but would that butt heads with cumulative impacts? Are we saying preserve other areas and focus to areas where cumulative impacts might not mean as much?
Well, it would be a land use consideration, and that's, as you said earlier, that's what this is all about, the master plan.
But don't you have to be a little bit careful?
No, I'm not saying it has to be done. I'm just, you know, Alan sort of said we're definitely not going to start making a map.
Yeah, and
well, that, but that was the direction.
Chris is pointing out this is one of the issues that needs to be addressed in number 8. How is it going to be addressed?
They'll look forward to that conversation.
Levin.
Next. The number 11 came from your comments, and I think that they were really good comments, that wildlife should be reviewed for effectiveness as development pressures potentially threaten wildlife areas.
Mm.
Yes.
Are you thinking that we're going to have some regional trail maps, for example, and staging areas, parking staging areas? Because there's none of that in the plan right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if the county's planning commission has preferences in those on those issues, like, for example, extension of the core trail, whatever, that we should have something like that in the plan. I don't know how others feel about that, but I mean, I read in the paper about all the parking problems up at Rabbit Ridge. Dry Creek, whatever. I just think recreation is something that we, and maybe we're stepping on the toes of what the Forest Service is.
I was just
going to
say, yeah.
I look to the staff to help us understand what our role in it would be in that.
Well, I think that would be a good conversation we could have with those agencies going through this process. I mean, they definitely will be part of the conversation. They'll be invited to the table to be part of the process. So it's a good comment.
We still hear oil and gas permits on federally administered lands. They still come in front of the board.
But that's only for access.
No. It's a review. You know, like if somebody, Chris gets an application for an oil well on BLM, you know, we have a review for offsite impacts. And usually they're so remote, it is just the access road. But if it was close to private property, then it could expand to other things.
Well, and that, the next one is number 12. That's a whole new set of circumstances, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Chris? Hello? Yeah. So we'll see how that all shakes out.
Yeah.
Does anybody really know?
I just came from an oil and gas seminar.
Mm-hmm. Chris, you want to come on?
And, sorry. I've been doing a lot of sitting.
Well, then you can stand. Yeah. It's okay.
I just came from an oil and gas seminar, and
there seems to be quite a bit of confusion. I think everybody's letting the dust settle a little bit and take another look at it. And the COGCC is going to be reaching out to communities to help explain what they think their new roles are and what they need to do to amend some of the ways that they're handling things and what different communities want to do as far as getting involved in what process they would like to be involved with the permitting process along with the COGCC. So it was a real interesting meeting, and they are...
Well, you don't know.
They don't know, and they're going as fast as they can because they have to meet a lot of deadlines. So I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot about it, you know, coming up.
Okay.
You know, I was just thinking that it was a week before last. I had a presentation, slight discussion with the Board of County Commissioners, you know, mainly because Commissioner Cargett and Melton were not here through all the oil and gas stuff we dealt with, you know, 8 years ago. And so basically it was just a brief history of what led us up to today and some of the changes to our regulations based on COGCC tightening some of their rules. And if the Planning Commission is interested, I'd be happy to share that PowerPoint with you as well. So when 181 does, you know, when the dust does settle,
right,
you won't be drinking from a fire hose quite as much because you'll have some of that information already. But I could schedule some of those that discussion for the next month if you like. All right.
Thirteen was an item that that you all asked for. Transportation and connectivity policies are outlined in the plan, but they're over, you know, close to 20 years old, so they should be looked at to see if they still reflect the changes in our community.
So that's like an A line between here and Hayden.
What's that?
Never mind.
Light rail.
Now you're thinking. And last item we had on there was reformat the plan to make it more user-friendly on the internet. And that's pretty self-explanatory.
Yep.
There.
I want to go back to just one real quickie. Alan made a comment that the matrix on mineral resources is no longer in play. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. Yes.
Has there ever been any consideration given for the opportunity of a landowner who knows for a fact he has mineral resources under his ground to designate and protection set aside those resources?
Well, I'm not waiting.
I'll give an example. Yeah. In Wisconsin, if you as a landowner know for a fact that you have sand and gravel on your property, you can go to the county, and the county will actually isolate that property from any development of any kind for perpetuity.
Yes.
Because what they don't want to do is see those resources be rendered useless or built on the magnet. There's compensation involved.
For the interests separated like they are here? Mineral from surface?
No.
Okay.
And that is the difference here.
Right. You know, but
land, you can, in fact, acquire those resources.
Right. But when, like, for example, when a landowner, surface landowner, submits a subdivision application to us,
mm-hmm.
you know, that there is, you know, a requirement that the mineral interest owners are notified.
Okay.
You know, so at least they get a chance to chime in. I mean, it's maybe a step in that direction.
Yeah, it's kind of close to that, but not quite.
And there is a policy in the master plan that states that subdivisions and use permits that are located on commercially available resources shall not be approved without the extraction of those resources.
This probably takes it one notch farther and makes it closer to the LPS system.
Sounds
I
like
think
it.
We need to be clear that you're talking about oil and gas compared to gravel.
So
what? There's a difference there.
Okay.
Because the surface, the owner of the surface, I believe, and I can double check on this, the owner of the surface
right.
has the right to the gravel and the sand. But I'm not sure if it's
how far down you can go there. So
oh, okay, that'd be interesting to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
But the split mineral ownership is oil and gas.
Gotcha.
I don't think it includes your sand, your gravel.
So let me throw a twist, though. You could have an underground mining operation for limestone.
For what?
Limestone. Now I'm down.
Yeah, and I don't know at what point separates. We could do the research for you.
I don't think it takes a lot. It'd just be interesting to see how that works.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because, again, I think the entire concept was the state recognized the value of those mineral resources, understood clearly that they're not making them anymore, and they were in areas that were subject to growth, and what they wanted to do was ensure that you just didn't render them useless. And this was a way to do that.
Just pertinent to Steve's question is, maybe too new to this commission, and I do remember the cartoons in the paper about a gravel pit on every corner from 10 years ago or 12 years ago, whatever it was. But I assume there's been an analysis of the overall gravel resources in the county?
You can do USGS.
Yeah.
I know you can.
Yeah. So I guess getting to Steve's question is, we may not need to do that yet because they may be abundant and widespread, but at some point, as these areas continue to grow, you could be growing into these potential gravel areas, mm-hmm. which are going to be needed forever. And so just topic of conversation.
It just threw me a curve when you mentioned that the matrix was no longer being used because I really thought it was a pretty nice matrix.
Which makes me work over into the topic of a matrix somebody brought up a while ago about intensity of use.
Yep.
And I had it written down also that I'd like to see a matrix of the permits that we've issued and the use. But if they're not going to be used because of the reason we're not using the gravel matrix, I don't know why we would worry about an intensity of use matrix.
And I think that's part of the task through this update process of trying to quantify what that means, intensity of use or cumulative impact.
Which it seems like it could be fairly straightforward if we took an analysis of all of the permits that we've issued and are existing, be it guest ranches or bed and breakfast or whatever it is, number of acres, number of people, number of nights, whatever the rationale is. And then I think you get a better handle on your cumulative type impact.
Okay. I mean, but if you like, I mean, because I'm sure.
No,
I mean, you may be.
If you're not going to use that gravel matrix for the reasons listed in here, it seems like the same issues come up with an intensity of use matrix.
Well, some of that could be avoided. I mean, because I haven't opened up the gravel matrix in years, but I remember when it was finished. That the planner that was assigned to that. I mean, we won a state planning award for that.
It was great.
You know, and the planner, I don't even think, was there to accept it. And he said, it's not going to last. You know, and it had to do with subjectivity and the amount of staff time it took to maintain that matrix. You know, we didn't have the time or the money to keep it up. So is that, could the matrix take those things out and still be effective? I don't know. It's a good question.
Well, and from my recollection of that document, whether it was a part of a packet in its existing form, let's say you didn't have the time to plug everything in, mm-hmm. but for every one of us sitting up here, it could lead to a hell of a lot of good questions as you're processing a gravel pit. Because they hit all of the buttons, if my recollection is right. And
yeah,
no, they did.
Yeah, when it was current, it was a good tool. All of that.
I mean, I took that matrix back to Illinois and shared it with county governments there because I thought it was that good. But I don't know what would have caused it to become out of date. That's what I'm troubled by, because it seems to me the issues are the issues. Nothing changed.
So if you like, we've got a live agenda for next month. You know, I'd be more than happy to, you know,
either sign it or do that research and let you know
what
the gravel matrix is and what happened to it.
And why would it be no longer of use?
That's the thing that I was, I don't know.
Okay.
It may have use somewhere.
Well, part of it is there hasn't been a gravel pit in 10 years, so whatever.
But we're getting to.
Yeah, back when it was done, well, our gravel permits have a maximum, the permit itself has a lifespan of 10 years. So if you have a 20-year gravel pit, you need to renew it. And around that time, and maybe just after the matrix, a lot of the existing gravel pits were coming up for renewal. And so we had to deal with a lot of them. And the county was looking for a way to make those, complex and emotional hearings, go a little easier. So that was, it was a great idea.
Of which I chaired most of those. And that matrix was a godsend from our position.
Yeah.
Sometimes the public agreed or didn't, but that document, if you pass that out, it was a great document.
Sure. Alexa.
Yeah, I didn't mean to get us off track, but it just...
Right. No.
It's a topic that's been near and dear to my heart my entire career, and I really liked that matrix. Okay. That was good.
Well,
when you said you don't use it anymore, I thought, really? What's that all about?
Okay.
It strikes me we're getting due for the cycle again, on the 10-year...
Well, there's been some renewals.
And I think that's the other thing. Like, there haven't been a whole lot of new gravel pits that have come in recently. The ones that have come in recently have been expansions of existing ones or renewals of existing ones. So the impacts were evaluated at that initial review and deemed in compliance with the master plan, deemed in compliance with the regulations. And so with an expansion or a renewal, it really, those impacts don't change all that much. Granted, they do somewhat, but not to the extent of placing a new gravel pit in a location.
I said one, but it was actually two. We had the Alpine Aggregate Pit across from the old Lafarge Pit in South Valley, which is right there by Catamount, Lake Catamount.
It's before my time.
And then also we had the King Mountain Gravel Pit,
right,
which I don't think it ever got past its first meeting.
King Mountain's been there since the mid-70s, but it's...
There was the county, County Road and Bridge came through.
Yeah, the topping pit.
It's
just known to that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on Planning Commission, and they went to Planning Commission, got roasted, and never came back.
Anyway, I didn't mean to digress or detract.
I will put that on the agenda for next month.
But, sorry.
Are we ready for the next
one? Example. Everybody wants to do.
I was waiting for them.
Or
I can basically
go through these one at a time. We'll just put them all up.
Maybe we should discuss.
So myself and Chris Brookshire went through some examples of master plans from neighboring counties, other resort communities, tried to find the latest and greatest trends and how people are now redoing their master plans. So we saw some trends. Some of them are listed here. People were including a lot more demographic information in their master plans. We were seeing a lot more comprehensive plans, not so many master plans, which were much more lengthy documents that were, ranging from 200 pages per plan versus our almost 50 pages. We saw some formatting trends, and there's some examples of that we'll show you in just a minute here. And links included in plans, and some examples also of how their policies are being used in their plans. Do you want to switch to the next one? So we've got a couple examples. This is one Chris found from somewhere in Wyoming.
Idaho.
No, this is Idaho.
Idaho. So this one's formatted, at least aesthetically, similar to our current master plan, how it's in two different columns, which was something that we were more drawn to. It just made it a little bit easier to navigate. Looking at this example, one thing that's different than our current master plan is under goals and policies, each goal has the associated policies listed underneath it. Our master plan currently has a list of goals and then a separate list of policies. as we sat down in our staff meeting looking at these different plans, that was something that we'd appreciated and thought it would make it easier for a reader to absorb the information. So I don't know if you guys have any feedback on, you know, that formatting change that we noticed, but...
Is that really true?
What was that?
I'm just looking at the master plan. So I'm on page 16, 4.2 goals. And then right underneath it is 4.3 policies.
Some of them, if there's only one goal, then they have the policies directly underneath it. Other ones are more spread out. You'll have like a few goals and then a policy.
Okay.
So one way of looking at it is we just want to make sure that each goal has policies.
That goes with it.
And what's the population of this county?
I'm not sure.
I am not sure. That wasn't part of my research.
Formats were looking at.
Yeah, we're looking at formats and getting ideas, you know, from different communities. And one of the things is we found a lot of things were more comprehensive plans, and that's why they were so long. They included so much information that it was overwhelming. And I did find communities that blocked out certain areas. It was like development areas within the county. So I guess you can compare that maybe to a stagecoach area, and they had a comprehensive plan or an overall master plan just for that one area, which we do have here, but they included it in one document.
Yeah, 157,637.
On the west side of...
excuse me.
Updated in 2018.
Coeur d'Alene, I believe.
Coeur
d'Alene. Yeah, wow.
Coeur d'Alene.
But I, move to the next one.
Right. But I think the overall point is just about the formatting and just how this plan is set up, where they state the goals and there are policies that directly correlate to each goal.
And I did notice that larger communities seem to have larger master comprehensive plans.
And that was sort of the reason for my question, because if we're a population of 25,000, comparing it to a population of 150,000 drives the whole document,
mm-hmm.
right? I would think. Mm-hmm. Have that much bigger population.
So this one is La Plata County's comprehensive plan. This is just kind of to demonstrate that a lot of these newer plans that are coming out that are, you know, maybe 3 or fewer years old have a lot of demographic information. They have a lot of charts. It's nice because it breaks up the information, but also the longevity of the plan, you know, could potentially be compromised if you're including a lot of demographic information, because it'll get outdated quickly. But aesthetically, it looks nice and it provides a lot of really great information.
I would discourage the staff from this, because it does get outdated and it does get overwhelming. I think, you know, basic population statistics, housing statistics, that's
right.
Fine. But some of this, you know, building permits, I just don't think that's relevant in a master plan.
Or providing demographic information in an appendix that could be more easily updated.
Rather than
could
within
be an alternative.
The
plan.
You know, and when I worked out the Front Range, and a lot of the examples that we had seen for those comprehensive plans or master plans that have a future land use map that show graphically where that growth is going to take place, often have, you know, like a high, medium, and a low projection. So in that future land use map, you know, could say, okay, well, the low projection, these areas, medium projection, these areas, high areas, these projections, and I guess we could take, you know, if you want to go there, that same idea to where, okay, at a low projection, you know, we've got, like Brian mentioned, Keeber, Milner, you know, what's left there, Steamboat 2 Metro District, Stagecoach, you know, so what could we accommodate really without spreading out? So, you know, I think that having these types of projections, you know, just puts us in that frame of mind to answer the question, where is it going to go?
It's just that you got to tie it to infrastructure, and we know Stagecoach is over-appropriated, so I mean, how much more can you build there?
unless there are major water conservation efforts taken. It, you know what I mean?
Those are for wells. It's not that doesn't really apply to the central system. I mean, they were trying to lock down their rights that they got in the 70s, but the over-appropriation issue mainly comes up if you were, you know, asking for 5 acres of wells. You know, so it's if it's got pipes, water and sewer pipes and stagecoach, it's not as big of an issue.
Okay.
So, but that's, you know, great question. In other areas, it is.
So this sample is from Park County. They just redid their master plan in 2016. They're also a relatively small county, and theirs was a smaller document. Aesthetically, theirs was really easy to understand and navigate through. Included in what they called their strategic master plan, they also had their sub-area plans in the final chapter, so that was different from what we currently have. But overall, they included quite a bit of demographic information as well. But overall, I thought their plan was really easy to navigate. We have that one printed out in the office if you wanted to see it as a sample. And also on your agendas, there's the links to some of these plans. But this one was probably the most easy to navigate, most appealing of the newer plans that I have looked through.
All right. Thanks, Tegan. All right, next steps.
Yeah, I'd say kind of working backwards. You know, the goal for the year, you know, as you know, was kicked around at the joint meeting with the commissioners, is that, you know, sounds like the commissioners are interested in getting some assistance from a consultant. You know, that would be next year's budget that I need to prepare. But there's a lot we can do this year, you know, with the direction that we'll have that assistance next year. So I would say that by the end of the year, I would at least like to be in the situation where we have our scope of services, you know, maybe even an RFP ready. So, you know, working back on that, you know, where we've got a scope ready, you know, mainly it involves bullet two, you know, our next set of meetings. So where we've got, you know, the staff list, plan commission list on that update, you know, there is still that reaching out to the community to see, you know, see what the community wants. And public involvement, you know, there may be some, you know, consultant help with that as well. But, you know, I would anticipate those meetings. Last time we went North Route, West Route, South Route, we did one in the South Route, and then Yampa was a little annoyed because we had it in Oak Creek. So I'd probably say two in South Route this time around. And then come back to Steamboat for the same type of meeting, and then maybe one after that to put everything together. And also, it isn't just, you know, I would say those would be Planning Commission meetings, that there are other things we can do to get the public involved. And, you know, I'm already looking for things. I don't know if you guys got this postcard in the mail about the special Rock County landowner meeting for the conservation district. Yep. You know, so I attended that. I talked with, you know, it was partially put on by Extension. And Todd Higgins, who said, hey, show up and I'll give you 5 minutes to talk about the master plan.
Great.
So I got to talk to, you know, farmers and ranchers about why they should be involved with this process. And so, you know, we'll come up with a list of stakeholders, you know, where staff or even Planning Commission members can step out and just try to get the word out about the update process and gain information about the community voice.
See, I think that's key. Of everything, that's probably the most important.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you, when we did the Steamboat Springs plan, I wasn't there that night, but, you know, in addition to going to, like, Rotary and HOA meetings, we went to Sun Pies, you know, talk with the owners, and, you know, we kind of had to ask ourselves that question, is beer buzz comments better than no comments at all? Well, you know, I don't know, let's find out. So we went to Sun Pies.
So going to the Roadhouse now.
Hey, can I sign up for that one?
That's right. You know, like I said, so we're just looking for,
I mean,
you know, ways to get, and not just come to us. We're
coming to them too.
You know, there's a lot of social media outlets exactly. that we can utilize now, and there's just more current trends and ways to do things now than they were before.
I mean, the county has a Facebook site. You know, Helena in the commissioner's office, you know, is going to run that. But you know, conversation I want to have with Dan is, you know, maybe the planning department has one. You know, I don't want to get in a situation where we're, you know, go down a rabbit hole with a troll. But, you know, good ways to utilize that, again, because there's an element to the community that might not comment outside of that, that avenue and forum.
Okay. Any comments for staff?
I got one more. All right. And these are just some of the tips I was, you know, thinking of going into this process. You know, you open up the title page, acknowledgement page of the master plan. Bill's name's on that. Troy's name's on that. It was actually just after Troy stepped down, but I thought, you know what? We did a lot of hard work, so we put him on that list anyway. So just, you know, I mean, guys, chime in anytime if you have any advice to commissioners that haven't been through something like this. You know, but I would say the first thing is read. You know, and through that process, you know, we went through a couple of meetings where we had working drafts, and mainly you have to read it every time. And every time a typo or a sentence that, you know, there are still, I read through the master plan and think, God, why didn't we catch that? And we had 11 members on planning commission, you know, a couple members on staff, Board of County Commissioners, and I think the attorneys ever wanted to look at it. And, you know, and there's still some things that got through. And so, you know, not only reading our plan, but, you know, I wouldn't expect you guys to go to each one of those links that staff provided and read those others. But, yeah, I mean, at least scan it. And if you think that, you know, Park County or that place in Idaho has some good ideas on format or whatever, you know, yeah, let us know. Because at the end of the day, it's your plan, right? I mean, we're trying to assist, but it's definitely your plan. You know, and, you know, with all that reading and time spent, you know, I think you guys have done a great job of, you know, for the rest of you that have just inherited that plan and was in place when you stepped up. But there's a certain level of ownership that you have when you've been through the adoption process, you know, when your name's on the acknowledgement page. So, you know, I would say go into it with that approach that, hey, you know, my name is going to be on. I'm not just a planning commission member that you know, again, that inherited it. So take ownership in the plan and the whole process. Next, you know, get out there and discuss. You know, I mentioned some of these, you know, outreach to people that have, you know, where people are organizing, you know, but because this is a legislative action, you know, as if you do, unlike a current planning application, if you run into somebody at Safeway and they want to talk about preservation of ag lands, do it. You know, this is the chance to actually get out and find out what you feel the community voice is. So definitely get out there more. And also, you know, think about, you know, not only what development is like today, but yeah, typically land use plans are a 20-year plan. And, you know, in I still have in the back of my mind, you know, multi-generational. You know, I know that's a long way out, and it's hard to identify in a 20-year plan, but to me, that's always in the back of my mind. So, again, current issues and look into your crystal ball. And I've added this one, too, that I've been through many of these planning processes, and, you know, I'm always thankful and grateful for whoever stands up to the microphone and whoever writes a letter. But there's always a couple people that show up to a lot of meetings and maybe pound the podium and insist on something when it's just them, you know? So you guys got to have that question in your mind. Is this the voice of the community, or is this just one person? You know, I can think of plenty of examples where we, whatever local government I was working for at the time, spent too much time for one person. Now, maybe it's a great idea. You know, and maybe it is the voice of the community, but just one person, you know, is bringing that forward. So I'd say just, you know, again, keep that in your mind. And if you don't have any other questions for us, that's the last slide. I love it.
Okay.
It looks great.
Um, Bob, did you have something you wanted to add? I mean, we've got your letter, and you can see this is pretty preliminary.
The only thing I say, Steve, is that Christie's points, 12 points, I think.
14.
Think of point number 4, 8, 9, 10, and 11, and relate that to the letter that I wrote.
Gotcha.
Because, it addresses the foundation of what I believe is about this county, which is the Amber River Valley. It's relevant to that, and I think that number 4 talks about climate change.
Right.
It's too broad of an issue because climate change is really water and temperature, and the forecasts for the effects of water and temperature are green.
Okay.
And so I think that all relates to what
we look forward to your continuing comments.
Oh,
I know that.
As long as my hearing aids, one just went out, so I'm hearing.
We done? Comments?
Sorry.
Questions? Speak up. We're starting with you. I might be done with him. Comments?
Superficially, well, I thought this was supposed to be a little bit more of a perhaps a detailed meeting than looking at a bunch of slides as to what we were wanting to accomplish in reviewing the master plan. So most of my preparation for this meeting is irrelevant tonight. But underlying the whole process, it seems to me, my question is, how do we know what the scope is until you go to the public? So early on, I thought that this was going to be all scoped at planning commission, and then we were going to take that to the public. But now it doesn't sound that way. I mean, I'm confused as to what you're thinking.
Okay. And you know, what we're thinking, well, again, months ago, staff reached out to the Planning Commission and asked us, first time informally, second time formally, as an action item, what do you see as the list? Okay. So we got 3 things. Okay. Christie went through the plan and picked out, you know, what we saw. Most of it's just administrative or, you know, updating, modernizing, you know, but things that we saw that needed to be updated in that plan. And in, like Christy said earlier, that this is the starting point. I mean, because I wouldn't want to have that first community meeting with just a blank sheet of paper saying, okay, community, what do you think? And so this is just one step closer to, hopefully, I don't want to say expediting, but providing some focus maybe for those meetings that, hey, at the basic level, before we check in with the community, this is what we have. So I think it'll better focus those hearings that we have in different parts of the county.
Steve, can I take a shot at that?
Sure. Yeah.
Thanks, Dan.
So, you know, I think I agree with you, Troy. You know, I think it would be helpful, you know, going forward from here, from today, to have an idea of, at least thematically, what you think we should be taking to the public to be able to get feedback and bring that back to you. I guess I envision a public engagement series where you're essentially offering out topics and trying to get people engaged on that topic. I think that's probably relatively, maybe overstating it, but relatively easy to get people on certain topics to come out of the woodwork, you know, that they're passionate about, and to be able to scope that conversation around what do you see, what is the plan sort of meant to you to date, what would you like to see in the future, and start to gather some of that information, because I think ultimately, you know, what we're talking about is the community vision, right? You know, and so we can bring that information back to you from a community engagement series about those topics and have a discussion of, you know, maybe it's the gadfly, but maybe it's a broader coalition people on, you know, specific issues. And I heard wildlife and transportation before. I'm sure that there are others, so I would love to leave today with a sense of what those topics are that you'd like us to throw out to the public. And, you know, if it's not thematic, I'm fine with that. But, you know, I guess that was my vision, was thinking about, you know, wildlife and transportation is the start, and then what else? And having community meetings that we can talk about those issues. And, you know, again, kind of just see what people would like to see in their community. You know, how do we then build a vision through policies, you know, essentially the master plan being the vision document that then guides the implementation of code and then how we evaluate proposals that come forward for land use. So that's how I envision.
And I don't think that's much different than what Christy and I have been talking about.
I guess the presentation tonight is sort of your ground zero thing, that you're trying to get people on the same page.
Right.
I think that Planning Commission probably has a significant, or at least I would hope they would, list of things to, I guess, put in the scope. And, I mean, I recall the meeting where you asked about, you know, input and feedback. I know that. I'm not sure. I don't think I was very well prepared at that night to sit there and give you the laundry list of issues and concerns that I have, because obviously there's been a lot more than three. And so then this is on the agenda, and I thought that we were going to then basically have that discussion of what did Planning Commission see as our concerns, questions, or issues that we would like to get out of this process, knowing full well that we hadn't heard anything from the public. And I agree with Brian's comments. They were written down in here somewhere, whether it's, you know, the Fitchfords and the Milners and obviously Stagecoach all rolled into one, but you know, I have no idea what the community of Milner or the community of Hayden feels like going forward. And I think it's important for us to know, as a planning commission, what does Oak Creek feel like? And I'm not suggesting, well, I guess it could be a community meeting, of course, but it's an interaction. It's like the APCC. Andy, I think this is a great topic, the UGB. You know, what in the hell are we going to do with the UGB? We ain't done nothing with it in 20 years other than get our knickers in a knot when they come in trying to annex all that stuff west of Steamboat too, which fortunately went out the window. But I don't know. It seems to me that we're, as a collective group here, we haven't got our ducks lined up. And obviously there hasn't been a sharing of Planning Commission and staff with whatever those issues are, even though you ask. I mean, I appreciate that. But I don't think any of us were prepared. I mean, how do you come out of a master plan update with three items? I think Planning Commission has always supported that master plan, and Steve would probably jump in and say, well, hell, we didn't see anything wrong with it to begin with. And I still think we probably share that.
Yeah, I heard that.
However, this thing seems to continue to be going down the road, and if we're going to go down that road, I think there's a lot of things, the way the Forest Service is behaving on a lot of their land. You know, I don't know how we deal with that.
Okay. Well, like I said, it's the starting point. The train hasn't left the station yet. So, you know, if you would like mean, Troy, the kind of conversation that you expected tonight, you know, prior to going out to the public, great, we'll stay with it.
But I think also, Troy, I mean, the three items that we got from Planning Commission and from Board of County Commissioners, we recognized was small. So I think the point of putting together and building on that list with those 14 items was just a springboard for bringing it to the public as a starting place. And, you know, until we hear from the public and get all of that community input, we can bring back that list and refine it based on what you've heard. I mean, that's how I...
That's about step three, right? I mean, that's about step three.
Right. I mean, this is just very preliminary and just kind of trying to engage with you guys on the plan.
And I appreciate that. I just don't think we've done a very good job of interacting with staff as to what... Again, if this thing's going to leave the station. Or we could just say, we're done. We don't want to leave the station. But if it's going to, I think Planning Commission, because I think every one of them has a voice that can bring forth issues that they see and deal with and have every day. And then they have their communities. You got your Oak Creek and Hayden. And Peter's not here, but we've got those people out there.
Right.
And, I mean, maybe Yampa comes back and says, we're happy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But maybe Hayden says, this is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected a better or a... I'm hoping that there is a better plan from Planning Commission and staff to get this in a box and then figure out what we're going to go with. Because I don't feel that now.
Right. And I appreciate that. And when we had this discussion with you all at the joint meeting, you know, we, you know, the temperature I was reading from you all is pretty much... The master plan is fine the way it is, not broken, don't fix. And a lot of you were basically saying a limited review. So we didn't want to overload you all with, I mean, everything. We brought 14 items of things that I think really need to be looked at in the plan. These important policies that, you know, challenge us every day in our land use decisions. So, I mean, I'm looking at this and, you know, internally we've just been calling this phase one and just trying to gauge that information out of you. And I do think we do need to take it on the road. And, you know, tonight's intent was to discuss those 14 items to say, you know, does this look good to you all? Is there any additional information, you know, that you want us to bring? You know, I know that list is going to change, and I see it being a snowball, you know, effect from each community we go to is going to constantly be changing, you know, from based on what we're hearing. But, I mean, that was the intent tonight.
If I may. First of all, Troy, you touched on this. I am one of those guys that probably takes the position that, look, based on the last 5 years of petitions before us, I'm not sure that we had real issues where the master plan was in conflict with the petitioner one. For the most part, it seems to be working. However, I do think the list that Christy put together, staff put together, 14 issues, there are some of them that are quite valuable and that we really do need to look at it, but I view that entire list as kind of a, you pick and choose. And let's go through them one by one at a next meeting, argue them out, and see how important they really are. But more importantly, what I don't want to see happen is what happened last time when we went to the public. We basically had public meetings and kind of sat up and said, well, look, we're here to really talk about what your thoughts are on the master plan. And I think to get a starting conversation going, we talked about VRBOs, or we talked about supplemental dwelling units. That sort of got some conversation started, but it wasn't much. And I think if we had a bigger list, we might be better served, which I think that's what this is all about.
And I agree. And if you guys, you know, it sounds like you're leaning towards a focused update instead of an overall update, you know, something a little more lengthy that, you know, once we come up with the list and, you know, hear from the community, then you decide what the scope is.
Yeah. And I'm good with that because I think when the data is over and done with, that scope's not going to be very good.
And that's fine. If that's what it ends up, because, as you know, I've been a fan of the master plan and really have had no problems with it.
Right.
However, I think issues have been brought up that, and I appreciated the concept of, you know, we need a date on size 03. So I'm willing to do that. But I don't understand, you know, why this thing should even dwarf over into 2020. I mean, if we're going to answer 14 questions.
Maybe it won't.
Well, I mean, I'm just, if anybody disagrees, I wish you'd jump in because I'm just spewing forth my thought. And I mean, this is, if that's the only agenda, our 14 items, I think we can do that in one night.
Well, that's
and
not true.
Why not?
Well, there's some pretty broad topics.
Well,
about climate change, I'm just thinking, Jesus,
well,
you could spend years on that.
I'm being facetious.
Okay, fine.
The point is, it's spending county money on a consultant.
Careful. I'm not advocating that.
I just don't think this is a big animal then. I mean, I want to go out to the public. I want to hear what those communities say.
Yeah.
I think the roadshow is valuable.
Oh, it's critical.
But it's just a non-issue, really.
But it gets back to, if you're going to do the roadshow, what you're going to do, you've got to give the public something to talk about. Because I think for us to show up and give them chocolate chip cookies and say, what do you think about VRB? That ain't going to fly. You've got to give them a list of items. Jesus. Who's last time?
You're just trying to get my go.
Yeah, yeah. Is it working? I'm done.
I like the formatting updates, getting recent pictures. I like all of that stuff. I think that is something that can be valuable to help make the document more relevant. I want to say that I think it speaks to the success of the master plan that so many times when you ask people about how they think it functions or how it improves, they really don't have a lot to say about it because it works in the background so well. And I think that's a testament to the document that it sits in the background and it's not so much in your face. So I do think that the growth is probably going to be about one of the biggest discussions that we end up having because of the lack of movement in development in, say, west of Steamboat, or if that is going to be a challenge, how or what role can the master plan play in helping to direct some of that growth to some of the other communities that potentially use the help from the growth. You know, maybe Steamboat's saying they don't want it anymore, but Oak Creek could handle a little more, Hayden could handle a little more, so I think that's going to be a big part of what we end up spending a lot of time on. And affordable housing is so tied into that, which to me, I've already used the word once tonight, but utopian, you know, affordable housing is such a utopian ideal that doesn't factor in market economics at all.
It's subjective.
It's so subjective. I think that's going to be a challenge, but it doesn't hurt having the conversation.
But to your point, when we went to Hayden, I don't know, I don't recall, did we ever talk about trying to grow Hayden at that meeting?
No, because they've got 300 vacant lots that are up for sale. They're just sitting there. Yeah,
that conversation did come up, but
But that's the point. I mean, they've annexed 100 acres.
At least a couple of developments.
And then they're building their $90 million school or whatever.
Yep. And a new bridge. Anyway.
But it'd be nice to visit with them.
Yeah. Gets back to you, though. I don't want to walk in there.
with one question, you know, well, what do you think about, and I know I said the RVO is about something, solid under dwelling units. Because that's kind of what happened last time. Well, and I'm not being critical, but that's what it was. I think the facts are, we went out into the community already having the answers pretty much to our questions, which were, public kind of likes the fact that the master plan exists and it does what it does, which is in effect preserves the rural character of the county, and they like that. Done.
And that was one of the only comments that I got when I asked about, at the most recent thing I was at, to the ranchers, how the master plan potentially helped or didn't help them. And I said that they didn't have any really good answers, but one gentleman did say that the transfer, so they just put a bunch of land in the land trust. And his comment was, the first time that they had done it, which was 10, 15 years prior, it worked out really well. And he said this time it almost wasn't worth it.
Why?
I didn't dig into it. It wasn't worth digging into it. But, you know, I kind of glanced over that and said, oh, they didn't have anything to say. But then thinking more back on that comment, what is he saying about that?
See, I would expect him to say, hey, you just keep doing what you're doing, because as long as you don't give me neighbors, I'm happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it goes to the challenges of having parcels of land broken up and how you have to manage having all that land broken up. But he specifically said it wasn't, the money wasn't nearly as worth it as it was the first time.
It could be tax implications, though, too. You know,
but how do we, with the master plan being a stated goal of kind of promoting that, how do we support, how does the master plan support that in a better way?
On a sidelight, I do think that the county has a map of conservation. And in planning the county, I sure would like to see that.
To be a little bit
so you can see what's left.
Yeah. And where?
Yeah, no. We might be having a lot of conversation about nothing.
Hopefully. Because it...
We'll get you the map, Trey.
Well, that inventory helps. You know, in the meeting about VBROs and that there's no commercially zoned properties left in the valley, there's a 5-acre site in Yampa right off of 131. Outside of Yampa. The land does exist.
Let me say this.
Sometimes we might overlook it.
Yeah.
It's just the market that exists.
Or the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Other people, comments?
I can ask.
Roberta, you're a land planner.
I mean, first of all, the prospect of redoing the entire master plan is just overwhelming to me because I know how much work it is, and I know you can spend $100,000, $200,000 on redoing the master plan. And I'm all for updating the graphics and updating the maps and having the links. I think those are all great technological ideas, but I don't think you can have a community meeting and open the entire, I don't think you need to open the entire thing up to the community. I think each of the planning commissioners ought to go back and reread the master plan and think about what, and it sounds like Troy's already done his homework, but think about what things you think need to be updated. And formatting and all that stuff is just a result.
How do you feel about the other items on the list? Robert?
Yeah. How do I feel about that?
Yeah, do you think that that's focused enough, not too much? I mean, if we were to go out to the community with that focused list.
I think most people don't even understand what the master plan is, quite honestly. I can just tell you the process that I had to go through this last year where our neighbors got together on that mini storage unit. Nobody understood that there was even a master plan, let alone how it affected their lives. So I think you have to go in with very targeted ideas about what topics you want to bring up.
I think housing is huge, but housing has to be tied to infrastructure. So, and I don't know that, I mean, I can speak to, you know, relative new resident in the county. I don't really understand how much infrastructure is available and what the capacity is and what the long-term plans are for, by the utility companies that do exist for making improvements that could increase capacity. And I also think there's a real need to increase density. Everything, you know, in growth areas. But I'm also very concerned about this overuse, overtaxing of recreational areas. It's a huge concern. So I just think we just need each of the planning commissioners, I would recommend, go back and look at the master plan and think about what topics you really, you would like to bring back and let staff know. I will do that.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
All right. So it looks like a round table speak.
It is.
I sort of. A lot of time went into this master plan, and I've gone on with what we have as a great foundation, and you just rip it out and start over and look at one of these other master plans, go up to Idaho and say, theirs is better than ours. I think they're looking at ours and saying, you guys have got the master plan. They look at what we've got. Go back and look at the LDSs and look at the different TDSs and all the different things that are thrown into that master plan that changed over the years. And we are willing to change. And that's what this is all about, I think. But at the same time, when we take it to the streets, Tegan and Chris look at all the master plans. The comprehensive plans are smaller. They're a compilation of our whole plan. We've got Hebert, Milner, and Clark, all of the smaller areas that don't have a plan. We just pour a storage in it. So when we take it up to them, we say, we are your, not commissioners, but your town board, and Steve's the mayor. What do you want Steve to direct us to do to have staff put a plan together for you smaller areas? Stagecoach, we went through hell putting the Stagecoach plan together. I was in on two different plans when I was on Oak Creek plan. Putting that thing together, the comprehensive plan, was a nightmare trying to get everybody on board and agree that this is what staff gave us to look at. They did a great job. Oak Creek has finally come together with a comprehensive plan. I've not looked at Yampas. I think that all of these smaller areas need to step up to what we have, not us step down to what they have. So I think what you've got right now with the 14 points is a really good start, but if we went to all these different areas and say, well, what do you guys have as a plan?
And I think you kind of missed the point there, Bill. You know, that it was more format or a technical end of things. Because I agree with you 100%. You know, I think the way that we do planning here, and I've, you know, had transportation pay invited to go speak in conferences about how we do it here. So the point of giving you other examples of recently adopted plans is to see if they've got little nuggets in there that we can use, not to use theirs as a model for how ours should be. That was our intent.
I did miss that.
I agree.
John, any comment?
It came up at the joint meeting with the county commissioners, and then Chad brought it up tonight. But as our needs and wants for this plan get to the budget stage, does the staff pull that together and try to make it fit?
Well, at the end of the day, it's up to the commissioners. But, you know, when I prepare my budget for next year, you know, we'll know a little more about, hopefully, the scope of this whole thing. And then I can reach out to, you know, my planner network and figure out what's the ballpark for a project of this size. So that'll at least give me, you know, a ballpark figure of what to ask for in the budget.
And then finally, the things I was thinking of, number 14 that Christy brought up, the internet friendly. I think undoubtedly we will, when we decide to get the community involved, have an ad in the paper or something. I think I would ask people, you know, have they ever been to the Whit County website and looked at the master plan, and was it useful, satisfy their needs? Because so much now, that's people's first resource. It's not looking up the county phone number in the yellow pages.
Unless you live in North Rowland, when we don't have internet.
Yeah, we're working on that for the Thomas. Yeah. We'll get to North Rowland eventually.
There's a tower up there.
I mean, I live that long. Brian?
I'm in danger of being the guy that says I am the Dilbert cartoon.
Got it.
I'll keep it brief, but I was just looking at the comments of County Commissioner Melton from the joint meeting and just the five-year review. I hear what you're saying, that this thing isn't really growth, so what are we really fixing? But I do think it needs some tweaking. I think it's more than a night, but I said this early on, that this will take as long as we allow it to, you know, and that's not putting a public comment in there, but, you know, public outreach. But if we, as a commission and staff, come together and agree with the list of what we think needs some review, and we've limited the scope, and we may not even get into next year, as you were saying, we may be able to finish up our review this year. Maybe 4 or 5 years from now, another planning commission needs to do the review that says it's supposed to be done every 5 years of the master plan. My focus is on the infrastructure. It's all about the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. I think you're trying to keep those areas open. You got to figure out what your capacity of your areas that have infrastructure on. And I, even though I've been at home, I can't tell you what, you know, how many building permits can SOA do, you know, that type of thing.
You know, at some point, I'm sure that you'll come back to us with a bunch of information, but two things that have struck me, that I would like information from the state demographer's office. And I think, did we have Aaron Light here in front of us?
Yeah.
Why? When?
Recently? Well, the Division of Water Resources, I think, you know, I don't expect in the near term a lot of municipal special district water going outside too far. So therefore, lots, rural lots, 5-acre minimums, whatever. If I just neglected to recall it, you know, maybe a paragraph or something that you guys already have, or something that brings me back up on the state and their issuance of well permits.
Yeah, I think I have a present. Maybe you weren't here that
night. She was here for.
Yeah, we had her here recently when we were reviewing.
I think she was here
changes
for
with the well.
Was she here for the supplemental dwelling units?
Yes.
She was here for both.
Yeah.
She's been here since, and maybe you weren't here that night. I'm not sure, but. But I have, we have maps, we have all that information and a presentation.
We have a follow-up letter from them also.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's...
And
Elk River's overappropriated.
I can see what I have.
Putting the hatchet down.
So is the AMPA.
I ran across something that wasn't overappropriated.
Well, the AMPA South is north.
North, yeah. So.
Anyway, I think that's something that...
Yeah.
Whether it's just the county, but...
But it's even past that on the water issue, that we're below the lower end of that stagecoach zone of influence.
Right.
Yeah, we may have to augment, you know, to buy shares out of stagecoach reservoir.
I understand.
But
the other thing is,
it's
too.
Less than 35 acres, I think you still get a permit.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Right.
Well, and the other thing I thought she said.
Where is office?
I thought we were done.
So, no, this is an 18-lot subdivision of 35 acres each. It's like a section of land, 18 property owners.
And our already platted.
Platted is 35-acre properties, all adjoining the county road. So it didn't go through any county plan, but it's going through a process now trying to get an adjudicated water right for water that's been used for 14 years.
Because the state would not issue individual water permits on 35 acres?
It's a pretty complicated question.
Really?
Yeah, I know some of these guys. It involves an original permit that was an oil well that drilled 2,900 feet and found a gusher. But gets in the water rights, and that water is 2,900 feet down, which is lower than Lake it's like the elevation of Lake Mead. But we're going to have to augment water for what we pull out of the ground because the Apple River Basin is over-appropriate.
But I thought over 35, you were exempt.
But that you've got a water system.
They have a water
kind
system.
Kind of.
It's not individual wells, correct?
That's correct.
Oh, well, yeah. That's the difference.
That's the difference.
It's an individual system.
Yeah. Yeah, true. We could all do our own deal. Who wants to drill the... Yeah.
But that was my point, is if you got 35 acres, you could get a permit. And you're just, you're impacted because of the system.
But even the 35-acre ones, I guess you can still pull them. We gave one away to Milner, you know, on half an acre, whatever.
Brian, we'll get you that information as well.
Yeah, we have a follow-up
later. We did some pretty in-depth research and discussions with the Division of Water Resources on what areas are over-appropriate, what kind of well permits can get issued in what areas of the county under which situations. So we'll share that with you. So
yeah,
that
I think that would be valuable forever.
Yeah.
But didn't she say that, like Steamboat Lakes, if you're doing 5 acres, they've got more than enough water? It's not a case of...
Well, the Steamboat Lake, they're working on a plan to be able to provide augmentation water out of Steamboat Lake. But it hasn't, as far as best of my knowledge, that has not been completed.
But where I was going to go with this is I've got a 5-acre parcel in the Steamboat Lake subdivision. I can get a permit.
Correct, because the subdivision was originally created prior to the basin being over.
And the only point in making that comment is when we talk in terms of potential future development, there's a lot of room in some of these subdivisions, at least for sure that one. There's a lot of 5 acres up there and room to grow from a development standpoint.
But they
also, we don't have any internet, forget it.
But they also have trouble with wells.
Oh, yeah. If you're on the wrong side of 129, you will have problems.
Absolutely.
So, moving forward, sounds like the next meeting needs to be more of an extension of this one.
I think you're right.
That basically staff will receive more input from Planning Commission on either the details of the list or additions to the list. And then at that point, you know, when we do end up taking this out to the different areas of the county, that will be the focus of the update, not necessarily leaving it open to, well, obviously there'll be public comment, but more or less the agenda will be discussion of the focused update that the Planning Commission's identified, something along those lines.
And I still think if you could, to walk into those public meetings with 14 points is too much. There was some way we could convince
them. No, we can just hit. A lot of those are just administrative.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of housekeeping, modernizing. We could just have that one topic and then just have bullets under that topic. Right. So that would reduce that list significantly.
And then I also think you need to reach out to your friends and neighbors and resources to try to figure out what we can do to get the public's attention when we're going to have these meetings. That's huge.
And that is huge. I mean, we kind of saw that. You know, when we had those meetings 2 winters ago, that there were a couple of different factors in there. Part of it was just to kind of educate whoever would show up, what services the planning department offers, what the master plan has done, and, you know, a summary of, you know, what it is, and then ask for, you know, some feedback or any questions. The attendance was poor. You know, we got to work out, you know, but, you know, typically staff and planning commission outnumbered attendees. Yeah, and, you know, looking back through my 26 years of doing this, you know, unless there is a fear to motivate people, you know, like the Catamount years, you know, in the late 90s or the gravel pits around 2003, you know, that those kind of things get people going.
Tell them we're going to allow storage units on AF property.
You know, and if you know, the annexation gets turned down, that might drum up a few people.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, that's an issue that, you know, that I have to deal with. You know, we've got to be creative, you know, and you know, think of different, and I mentioned that earlier, that it's not just to get people to us. You know, part of that is these people probably just aren't going to show up, so we're going to, you know, get as much feedback as we can, you know, even if it's on their turf. Want to go to some place with me?
So how successful was it when you had, you know, a beer available?
You know, I didn't go to...
He doesn't remember.
Oh, okay. I have read, you know, in Planning Magazine and things that is, a, you know, pizza and beer getting people to come out.
I've
always said we should be doing these at the free concerts. The whole community's out then.
Yeah, you know, maybe how they have some of the booths like lift up is out there, and you know, but yeah, I mean, along those
lines.
That's
a good idea.
Because like the old way of doing things was just come to us if you're interested. That doesn't work anymore.
Well, I think one of the meetings, it wasn't on the last round, but two rounds ago when you were playing the game, put pieces where you thought it was most important. The Oak Creek meeting was well attended, I think simply because there was another item agenda that was like somewhat controversial. So there was a big crowd in the first place there.
Right.
That's it. Storage units on A property. It's easy.
So you just probably have fake up with individual topics in different parts of the county.
Gambling.
To get them interested.
Gambling.
There you go, gambling.
Mild. Elk Creek floated it for a while. I was hoping it would go when I had the restaurant. Boy, I had a whole scheme.
Okay.
Well, thank you, guys. Because I know you did a lot of work to put this together. And I think your 14-point service is ours. Myself.
Thank you. So I still, you know, as far as scheduling that next date, you know, I'm not sure if May 16th is too soon, but we'll take a look at that. But, you know, staff and I, we need to sit down and then, again, with that goal of, you know, at least of having the scope done by the end of the year. And if it's simplified, which it seems like it is, probably before that. But anyways, we'll also have for that next meeting, you know, some target dates and when we'll be reaching out. Because, you know, I did mention these two South Route, West Route, North Route, Steamboat, those are Planning Commission meetings. But I'm not saying that, you know, early you need to drive both South Route meetings. You know, you definitely if you want to, but I think that it's just important that there's a quorum there. And
depends if there'll be beer there.
What? Too bad Andy didn't have
picked up on it. We could have taken care of that.
But anyways, we will, we got to be creative. You know, we got to think of ways to gain the community voice.
Agreed. That's your job.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Anything else? Do you have an administrator's report you can give us?
Yeah, I mean, nothing at the Board of County Commissioners that you guys had seen since last time we met. Thursday, May 2nd is our next scheduled meeting. Middle Creek Ranch, special use permit event. I think that was in front of us 3 years ago. And this, that's the only item on that night. The 16th is... preliminary plan for Young's Peak Preserve. You know, you guys had seen the sketch plan years ago, and then actually water issues held that up, but they're back now. And
lunch is on that night, so.
Oh, it's not in my calendar.
No,
it's not in the meeting calendar. Okay, we have one more. And a 2-lot subdivision.
Lunch. That's for May 16th?
It's up. It overlooks the Strawberry Park School campus on the 16th.
I have a request. Mr. Pettis has never had the Eric Knauss
Right.
I'm sure Eric would love to come to a planning commission meeting.
Yeah, typically we do those in April, but because of attorney caseload and other issues, yeah.
Is it exclusive to Eric?
You know, but you're right, it's light enough. No, actually, yeah, how many of you have never had the class, I guess,
either way? Well, I would think Brian.
I don't know who Eric Knaus is.
Eric Knaus or Linnea South, the county attorney and the assistant county attorney. They typically have got annual training with planning commission.
Yeah.
Me?
Roberta, I'm sure has not.
I have not. I didn't even know who I was.
Okay.
So there's at least three.
Yeah. So we'll get that. You know, we'll see if they can put something to get now.
Can they do that the second,
tell
maybe,
you how
since we
break all the laws every day?
Yeah. I'll ask about the second. That might be a little soon. Because Eric's already submitted an email. He's away for spring break.
Oh, good.
He's busy now, and his catch-up is going to be... But he's already got his information prepared, so I'll check with him. We'll see if we can shoot for that. But, yeah, I mean, it used to be closer to the first of the year, and then we decided that it's probably better to have that in April after new members are appointed. So I'll try to get that on very soon.
It's called next party stuff.
Well, yeah. I think I know what it is.
I would think you would, too.
I am.
Silence.
No, go ahead and do it.
All right. That's it.
He's moving.
Thank you. Second? Perfect. We're done.